Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. Joining us in the studio now is Dr. Jake Long, the superintendent of Mountain Home Public Schools. Dr. Long, welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, it's been a while.
It has.
It might have been a whole year already.
A whole year?
Maybe.
I don't know. I can't remember when the last time was. But
maybe it was Christmas. I don't know. Obviously, with what we were trying to figure out before we went on the air, we don't remember anything around here, apparently. Well, we're full swing into summer. This celebrated the first official day of summer. School's been out now for
three weeks.
Yep. All kinds of activities still going on at the schools, just behind the scenes stuff. Is there a way to just kind of recap in general the school year that we just accomplished?
As far as a recap, I wouldn't even know where to start outside of. The accumulating event of the school year is certainly getting those seniors across the stage. I mean, that's why we work hard for 13 mm-hmm. years. That's why parents, pour all that they pour into their mm-hmm. child's education. That's why the teachers do what they do. And so, being able to graduate, close to 300 seniors is certainly a good year and something that we should all be proud of.
Large senior class.
It was a large senior class. So those numbers, coming back into replacing that senior class coming back in the fall, we're very curious about at this point we do have about 222 kindergartners for next year registered. That's quite a ways ahead of where we have been, in years past prior to the start of the school year. We've had several registration days this past spring. And of course, we'll continue those, I believe August 1st is our first new student registration day. So we're anxiously watching those numbers to see where they come in. But we did finish this school year up about 50 students prior from year before. So we've changed that trajectory of student enrollment from years past. We were on about a 5-year steady decline, nothing, just real significant. But this is the first year since I've been here, and I'm completing year three, that we have changed that line. So
you and I both serve on the board of directors for the Chamber of Commerce. I've heard you say that several times in our meetings, and it's a snapshot of kind of the overall picture of our community as well. There's not great decline that we see. But there's not any substantial growth that we can pinpoint either. And that goes from business community to schools to churches. Yeah. I mean, all of those together.
Yeah, I know that, I think that all of it, not just Mountain Home Public Schools, but you take all of our schools in our area and you talk to any of those superintendents, and it's there may be a little increase 1 year, a little decrease the next year, but overall you look at those trends and everything's pretty flat. But for us it had been, kind of a pretty steady decline, going back to, really 2012. Mm-hmm. So
this was interesting when I first heard you say it, which was the kindergarten class of the 08 recession.
Yeah.
So I never thought about it in those terms.
Yeah, and people want to know, what is the cause of this, and I don't think there's any one single, thing other than, economic opportunity, parents maybe mm-hmm. being a little more conservative with, the number of children that they're having. Yeah. And
well, that's been in the news a lot. I don't know how much, you can isolate to our area, but, nationally, the birth rate numbers, there's been a substantial decrease.
Yeah. So that's what we try to do. We build basically a spreadsheet based on the number of live births, mm-hmm. Happening here in Baxter County, and then correlate with, our kindergarten enrollment and then project that out, get a ratio, like a 10-year ratio, and then project mm-hmm. that out over the course of, at year five, whenever a child would enroll in kindergarten.
There's been some numbers recently about the number of babies that were born at Baxter Regional Medical Center who tested positive for an active street drug in their system. Now, that was not a full-blown, year-long study
yeah.
that Baxter Regional conducted, they had seen internally that, you know, these numbers are a little higher than they used to. Mm-hmm. So they looked at a four-week span. So I think people need to keep their parameters in mind. This was not a, you know, I don't know how they regulate, you know, national research studies, but this was just kind of a four-week trend. And they saw almost 40% of the babies that were born during that specific period testing positive for drugs. And when I heard that statistic, I texted you mm-hmm. because as a parent, you know, you have all those worries and concerns about the babies that are born and about our community. But then you also worry as a parent, how can our school accommodate? How do you socially put all of those kids together in one classroom?
You know, I think you bring up a staggering statistic. And so, you know, I would like to see a little more of the, you know, a more formalized, mm-hmm. you know, approach there, you know, within that statistic and see that. But, and then secondly, I think you bring up a challenge in which, you know, we certainly face not just in our community and not just in the state of Arkansas, but I would say kind of regionally.
Absolutely.
In which, you know, challenges, the truth is our students are coming to our schools with a higher level of challenges and not just learning challenges.
And need.
Okay, mm-hmm. so needs, you could start everything from those basic elements of safety, security, and then, you know, most recently the hot topic in the world of education and nationally has been mental health services. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at the rise of number of suicides, the rise of, school shootings. And I don't want to wrap all this up together, but somehow there is some connectivity between the challenges that we are facing as a nation, as a community, and then as a school system, mm-hmm. Because I do believe that our schools are the backbone of our community. And, I think that we do a tremendous job here in Mountain Home of personalizing an education, for what every child needs. No matter if it's a child of special needs, if it's a child of social and emotional needs, if it's a child that is gifted beyond, you know, what we would know, you know, what to do. Yeah. And so the truth is, you know, we may not be very diverse with our ethnic makeup, but we are extremely diverse with socioeconomic, we're extremely diverse with learning capacities and learning mm-hmm. needs. And so schools have become very well equipped to personalize that learning to what every child needs. And that's something that we've had to face, you know, not just, you know, recently. I mean, that's something schools have been molded to do for decades. And so the whole concept of, you know, take your middle average, you know, education and let you shoot kind of down the middle has certainly gone to the wayside, and our educators are trained to give every student what they need. Mm-hmm. Costs more money because you have to have a varied amount of resources, a varied amount of personnel, training to be able mm-hmm. to do that. But it's certainly a challenge in which we're willing to take on.
You bring up money. Would you describe our school system as fiscally strong?
Yeah, we are very sound. You know, probably as strong as we've been ever, you know, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been able to be able to compensate our employees we've added 1% this past year to all salary schedule, salary and benefits. The year before is a 1%. Year before that, it was a 2.5%. And we've been able to continue to do that through good planning while a declining student enrollment. So our board kind of saw this and they decided, you know, hey, let's make sure that we are able to deliver this what I would call and what you know, others around the state would call a world-class education to our students, regardless of the number of students that we've been mm-hmm. serving. And so just because we have fewer students coming to our classroom doesn't mean that we should not have as many programs for them mm-hmm. or as many resources or availability to the overall educational experience because there's fewer of them. We just need to proportionalize ourselves in a way in which we can continue to be sound, deliver mm-hmm. these things that the programs and services that our students deserve, regardless of the number of students we're serving.
Two news items I want to ask you about. Okay. First being an article that that appeared on KTLO.com earlier this week, I believe, if not last week, but 4-day school week. That's been in the news a lot. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a very interesting concept to think about. But, you know, we live on the border of Missouri, so yeah. And they have the ability yeah. to do that. Arkansas, we can't do it. So we, you know, until they make changes in Little Rock, it's not an option for us.
Well, I'm not saying that you can't do it. You can't do it without basically going to a very, you know, kind of year-long kind of model. And so year-long school model, you know, I would say there may be some schools that would tap into that, but you go, you know, 4 days a week, 4 days a week. And obviously it's going to take more weeks to get in mm-hmm. the 178 student attendance days. The other thing, other side to that, that I think the conversation should kind of surround itself mm-hmm. is, what's the benefit to student learning for a 4-day school week? Mm-hmm. Is there a benefit to going 4 days and going all year long over, you know, going 5 days, getting your 178 required days in, and then taking a two-month break? So there is some things there with student learning that I would like to see the data on because mm-hmm. I haven't even looked into it. There's so much about our community that is surrounded around I would say those kind of summer months that the tourism.
That's the big argument. Yeah. The second leading industry in the state of Arkansas is tourism. It's behind agriculture, and so how do you balance that need with school learning?
Yeah. So that for us locally, I would say, you know, I wouldn't even kind of even open up that conversation without it being a community driven mm-hmm. type, you know, conversation. Because we look at it from a school standpoint, and that doesn't always align to, you know, hey, what is mm-hmm. our community needs? We know a lot of our parents. We know a lot of our you know, our employees, you know, and workforce is, you know, the busiest during the summer months because mm-hmm. of what we're trying to do. But
there are some challenges to that. I mean, what do you do for childcare?
Exactly.
On a Friday if you don't have school? I mean, that's a big question.
Somebody would take that mm-hmm. question and then ask, well, what are our parents doing for childcare in the summer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
piecing it together with duct tape and prayers.
So, you know, the conversations are certainly good. Ultimately, it comes down to why schools are not just jumping onto it. It's mm-hmm. it's a legislative issue with schools being required to have 178 student attendance days, and the schools in Missouri being able, their minimum requirement is 1,044 mm-hmm. hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so you correlate those two things, and it's mm-hmm. It makes it more difficult based on the 178 student attendance days.
Speaking of childcare, you guys offered a very unique experience this year that was a first for our school system. That was an after-school program for, was it kindergarten, first and second grade?
Yes, it was.
So after school, and you hope to expand that as we move forward.
Yeah, we started in about January for an after-school program. We had about at the end of the year, about 30 students in the program. Now, they weren't showing up every single day. You know, we offered it up to parents to where, you know, if they needed, you know, after-school care on a Monday, but they didn't need it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then certainly we mm-hmm. would accommodate for those things. And so I do think it was a good program and opportunity for that school day to be extended. Both for the child on academic needs and then also for the parent for, you know, supervision. And, you know, I think that schools in general have to be more aware of providing those customer-friendly type opportunities for our parents. You know, over the past few years, we've opened up our doors, our doors at 7 a.m. So we're providing, you know, supervision, mm-hmm. breakfast for students. That way parents can go to work. And, you know, honestly, some people would, you know, that I guess we can make anything controversial, but some people wanted to even debate that, and that what is the duty over, you know, parent responsibility versus, you know, schools. And my opinion is that our schools belong to our community, our schools belong to mm-hmm. our parents, and however we can best serve them is the way that we should provide those opportunities. We're not making children show up at 7 o'clock, or we're not making them stay till 6. All we're doing is providing an opportunity for our community to take advantage of it. So
people can debate all they want.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, we appreciate you taking care of the kids who need a little extra time, and the parents as well. The breakfast is free, by the way.
Yes.
That's a big thing. Free breakfast to anybody?
No, we're talking about after school, the after school snack.
Okay.
Okay. And then, but we are, you know, I guess this is the first time that I've publicly talked about it, but we are looking at free breakfast for kindergarten, first, and second graders. And so
breaking
I wish,
news on local matters. We don't get that opportunity very often.
So, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't have any of the hard details on that, but we are working very hard to create a model based on, you know, our student population. Other schools in the area, I know Cotter's been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. Other schools are much easier to be, they're able to qualify for that program a lot easier than we are based on our socioeconomic makeup. And
you qualify based upon the number of students that are on free or reduced
yes,
lunches.
Yes.
And our numbers, although staggering around that 65 to 70%, are not as high as a school like Cotter, who had upwards of 90%. Is that correct?
Yes. I don't know their exact. Ours is it's around 55%.
Okay.
But it does vary from building.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is identify mm-hmm. the buildings that are closest to that point, to where, you know, even if we are having to subsidize it in some way, mm-hmm. we're able to provide that as a service to our kids and our parents.
In the younger grades, they're more likely to fill out the paperwork qualifying for the free or reduced lunches. In the junior high and high school grades, the kids don't want to give you the paperwork. I mean, that's what it comes down to a lot of times.
Yeah, and you know,
and good for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a pride thing.
Absolutely,
we get it.
And I can't blame mm-hmm. anyone either way for that.
Absolutely.
I mean, I really, you know, I think that it really, you know, our country may need a little more of that every now and then. So
we'll end on that note. Let's take a break. You're listening to Local Matters on KTLO. Welcome back to Local Matters on KTLO. This is Heather Loftus. Joining me once again is Dr. Jake Long, superintendent of Mountain Home Public School System. Dr. Long, school shootings dominated our school year and our news cycle for the past few months. It seemed like every other week we turned the news on, national news, and it was happening in a place where they would say, I never expected it to happen here. But I noticed at the end of the school year in Texas, they interviewed someone. And the parent said, yes, I expected it to happen here because it's happening everywhere. We talk about it at home. We plan for it at home. And I make sure my kids know exactly what to do in those situations. I know you go through active shooter drills at Mountain Home Public School System. All grades go through those drills.
Yes, yes. We drill it. We talk about it. You know, you bring up Texas. And just this morning I was reading a report issued by the governor of Texas. He put together a commission, much like mm-hmm. Governor Hutchinson has done here in Arkansas, and I expect to see a similar type report come out of his office. But you know, the report, as far as recommendations for schools, you know, really boils down to three things. Boils down to a greater amount of police presence or security. Comes down to
mental health services for students, greater amount of services, counseling for students to identify and assess needs, identify and assess threats, identify and assess trauma. Mm-hmm. And when I say trauma, I don't mean like bodily harm trauma.
Sure.
I mean social and mental trauma, and then also a greater amount of training. And so each one of those things, you know, we have, I feel like in Mountain Home, we have done, and we've proactively tried to, you know, kind of get out in front of that. We recently have been able to add two new SROs. So every campus will have a licensed, commissioned law enforcement officer at all of our campus.
Mm-hmm. Do they carry guns?
Yes, they do. And so that is... you know, that's a step ahead of what the majority, when I visit with some of our area or some of our other superintendents around the state, you know, that's a step ahead. You know, that is coming out of, you know, our local operating, you know, revenues. So that's an investment in which, you know, our local school board, you know, myself, you know, has determined to be, you know, this is what we're going to do. We've also added, you know, a mental, we're developing our own in-house school-based mental health program. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be some more things added to that. But once again, it's about having that opportunity to assess student needs and intervene prior to anything, you know, coming to fruition.
I remember after Parkland, one of the students said, you know, they knew that there was something different about the student that ended up committing the murders and the shooting. And, you know, had all the signs. I mean, wore the trench coat. Yeah. I mean, did all those, had crazy posts on social media. Is there a process that a student at Mountain Home can go through if they're worried about someone? I mean, obviously they can go to their teachers or their counselors or whoever and talk about it. But, you know, do students in general feel comfortable doing that?
You know, I would hope so. I mean, that's why we have to focus on those relationships with our students. Mm-hmm. You know, our school administrators, the job of a school administrator, a school principal has greatly changed even over, you know, I haven't been in this business very long, but even over the 10, 11 years that I've been in it and seeing the change of a school administrator, it's changed. I mean, our school administrators are asked to be threat assessment experts.
We need some former FBI or CIA yeah. or somebody
to get right? into the, yeah. the principal profession, huh? But that's the truth, and they do a great job in doing that, because they, at any point in the day, they have to see a student, know the student, recognize, mm-hmm. You know, what the need is, and then develop and formulate a plan to move forward. Whether we're talking about a threat, whether we're talking about a home issue, you know, it's...
I hadn't even thought about it in those terms. The threat assessment basically on every student, be it security, food, safety. I mean, all those things.
Education. Let's not. I mean, we've sat here and
we are here talking. We haven't even. And that's the whole. I mean, I guess that's the whole. You and I have been sitting here talking for almost half an hour, and we've barely covered education. Yeah.
And that's the part that I think that's normal, because that's the part that people just expect to be going on. But as we sit here today, we have, you know, probably I'd say 70% of our teachers, educators, are learning how to be better educators. And so we're sitting here talking about these things that are picked up typically, you know, in
that,
the media.
That crazy media.
Or that people, not even the media, but the things that people typically want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, our teachers are learning how to, you know, ensure that every child is on grade level, on reading grade level, mm-hmm. and they're learning how to be stronger mathematicians and how to mm-hmm. provide a greater amount of career and technical opportunities for our kids. And so that's just the world we live in. Mm-hmm. But we have to be so diverse in our preparation and our opportunities.
Let's talk about one of your great passions. That's technology in schools. And there's so many, you know, we see all the Chromebooks around town and all the kids talking about, you know, their tablet and what they get to do. But there's a lot of technological infrastructure that's been going on at our schools that is not maybe visible, you know, when you go in the school system. But, I mean, you guys have put a lot of time and resources into wiring the buildings, per se.
Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned that it'd be a passion, and that might be a little bit extreme. I think it's a necessity. Whenever you look and you see the amount, you see what we are to be preparing our kids for the workforce. And so the necessity for them to be able to, both for engagement purposes, because they live in a world like we never even imagined growing up with. We remember the world prior to, you know, the iPhone, the Facebook, the social media. We remember that. They don't. I mean, it is their life. And so the necessity has come out of being able to engage them, and then also to be able to give them this unlimited amount of resources for learning that exists for them that we didn't have. Whenever we had what the teacher knew, we had what was in the book. All right. and you know, I'm sitting here before you at 34 years old to say, hey, we had the teacher, we had the book. Okay. And then our students have whatever they want. I mean, we have before us, both of us. And so being able to give them that unlimited resource in the device and then also in the accessibility through the infrastructure has been a necessity to be able to do. And so with the more devices coming on board, we have to be able to support that. And so our students, we have put in great amount of resources into ensuring that, you know, those so-called pipes are big enough to be able to handle the amount of
traffic
that exists. And 'cause if you just do the devices and you don't do the infrastructure, then, you know, you've got a bottleneck just like you would on the highway if, you know, if there's not enough capacity to be able to handle it. But ultimately, let me say this, ultimately, the technology is simply a tool, okay? It's a tool for learning, both for engagement and then also for knowledge. It is not a substitute for teacher, for human relationship, for that interaction that I think ultimately provides the highest level of learning. And I know that we all fall into that trap of just allowing the device itself or the program or the movie or the TV show or the YouTube video to be a substitute for that interaction. And I think we have to strongly guard ourselves against falling into that trap, both as parents, both as parents and then also even as educators. We can't just say, okay, here, you know, you're learning because you have a device in front of you and you're watching this YouTube video and this and that. It's simply a tool. We have to continue to be engaged and provide that human intelligence, even though AI is coming it's coming so far. I mean, it's just scary what we see going there as far as human prediction and predictive nature.
Don't think of AI as a robot sitting beside you.
No.
I mean, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, we are not. We're talking about this unlimited capacity of data that is able to predict human behavior. And that's ultimately where I think AI is headed. And do I think AI will have a piece in the educational experience? Absolutely. I mean, we're crazy if we sit here and say that it won't. But ultimately, you know, God gave us a brain, and there's no there's no substitute for what we can do as caring professionals for our children. And
we're seeing, and you make a fascinating point there. We're seeing with kind of our graduating seniors from high school to college, I mean, that segment of students and kids who all they've ever known is the iPhone and the technology part of it, who are lacking greatly in the soft skills, the communication. All they've ever had is the unlimited ability to communicate, yet they can't sit down here and talk to you and I, you know, with those soft skills or go into the workforce knowing how to, you know, work in, you know, an office with 30 other different individuals without just texting them what they mm-hmm. need. Are we addressing that as part of our educational path?
I would say yes. And we're having to adjust on the fly of that because, you know, we haven't known what we didn't know here. That exact conversation came up at our last business advisory board meeting, and then it also was reinforced in a conversation that I had with one of our local employers. I don't mind Rob Finley, and he mm-hmm. and we were talking about, you know, the need for the communication and the skills that our kids mm-hmm. are coming out with. They have a skill set that are beyond what, you know, they come to the table and they show us their skill set, and we're just, you know, we're just wowed by it. And then, you know, we start diving into some of those interpersonal things and some of those communication things. And it certainly
and
is.
And we start beating our head against the wall.
And we start beating our head against the wall. And so it is something that, especially the communication side of it, mm-hmm. it is something we have to intentionally do and not mm-hmm. just expect it to come out. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a large portion of our students that are strong communicators. Mm-hmm. That are communicators by, you know, nature. But I do feel like it's going to have to be one of those things that we don't just leave up to chance in mm-hmm. the development. We have to intentionally help develop those soft skills, communication, hard work, those things that are critical and important.
We all had to figure out how to communicate in the workplace. We all had to find our own way. You know, the goalposts have moved a little bit,
yeah.
you know, with this generation.
yeah.
But, you know, we've all had to figure it out
That's right.
some degree. So I don't, you know, the problems are pretty big, but they're not all that different than,
yeah.
you know, maybe we like to sit around and
yeah.
opine about.
Absolutely.
Dr. Long, give us take us through, paint the picture if you can. I've had the opportunity to tour all of our buildings and facilities within the school district. But, you know, we live in an area where a lot of people have moved here. They've retired here. They may not have ever had a child within our school system. And it's so fascinating to see a classroom, today's classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we think about, okay, you walk in there, you've got 30 desks all lined up, everybody sits down, gets their pencils out, and then they sit there for an hour. Today's classroom could not be more different than that.
Yeah, it certainly has changed. Now, there are places in which, you know, that type of learning does still exist, but it's certainly in pockets. You know, whenever you go into a classroom, you're going to see, you know, flexible seating arrangements. You may see a beanbag. You may see, you know, carpet time. You may see cubby holes. You may, you know, so just depends on the area in which you are. But that flexible seating and that learning structure and that learning environment, you know, has changed. And ultimately it comes down with how are we best going to be able to engage our students. It may be small group. Another big thing is project-based learning. And so you may be going out to, you know, work in a shop for it. You may be mm-hmm. taking on a project and saying, okay, here is a need. Let's develop a plan that encompasses, you know, math, science, English, and social studies into this project. And so say that, you know, this landscaping needs done. How can we incorporate math, science, English, and social studies into landscaping?
That's, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. There's no better word than it's just pretty cool.
So the project-based learning is something that, you know, we do feel is a critical piece in teaching our kids at all levels. It just looks different from the, you know, the level of the skills involved into the project. It could be everything from, you know, building a bridge at the secondary level to, you know, what's the, I can't even think of it. What's the, like 1950s, 60s day at Pinkston where there's, you know, embedded, you know, learning in, you know, this history. I wish I could think about that, but I can't remember exactly what that day is. So just looking at projects, whether they be service oriented, whether they be, you know, actual constructing something or just solving a problem. And I do feel like that we'll continue to see a large amount of project-based learning happening in our schools and in our classrooms.
So what's coming up next year? What do we need to know?
Oh, well, the biggest thing is, you know, new student registration happening on August 1st. We have our back-to-school bazaar on August 3rd, which I believe you and I have a responsibility for.
Yeah, we probably should get busy on that.
So, you know, that's an opportunity for our students to, all of our students to come in and pick up some school supplies and resources.
Free school supplies for any Mountain Home Public School System.
Free school supplies, absolutely. And, you know,
we're working on haircuts and some clothing options kinds of different things.
Yeah, we're also going to have some resources there for, you know, parents that might want to, be plugged into the school year and then also some other things as well. Big thing that I'm really excited about for next year is, you know, this is in the area of literacy. We've recently hired a K-12 dyslexia coordinator, along with identified three of our three literacy teachers to serve as teachers on special assignment to really provide a shot in the arm for, you know, ensuring that our students are on grade level, are on reading grade level. So excited about that. You know, the we continue to expand our opportunity for our students at the secondary level in the areas of computer science, coding, ASU Mountain Home, concurrent credit. And I say this often that, you know, I feel like we've provided an opportunity for a child to get an education delivered in whatever way that they could possibly deliver it. And so I'm proud of that. I think our greatest challenge is ensuring that we provide, you know, a high level of rigor, and we take each of those things to a depth in which our kids deserve and our community deserves.
We've also got Bomber Fest coming up on Friday, August 17th. That's the school is back in session on August 15th. It'll be here before you know it. And then, of course, that first Friday that school's back in is Bomber Fest and the KTLO Barbecue Cook-Off Challenge is a part of that. I have to get that little plug in. It is usually the hottest day of the year. Maybe we're hoping for just a couple clouds. That's all. While we're standing next to those grills, if we could have a couple clouds, that's all we could ask for, right?
Yep, that's right.
So have a good summer. We'll
yes,
see you in the fall.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to Local Matters on KTLO.